This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. It has been found that 60% of unemployed workers in Malaysia are aged between 15 and 24 years of age. To empower marginalized youth with the opportunity and skills they need to become successful entrepreneurs is one of the pillars of Agency Inovasi Malaysia's Berbudi Berganda Social Impact Innovation Challenge. 12 finalists are fighting out to win RM30,000 to spur their projects forward for the good of society. Three of them in the studio to share their experience training youth are Datu Anusha Santirasthibam from Disruptimus International Club of Petaling Jaya, Katie Lee, who's the Executive Director of Hope Worldwide Malaysia, and Webster Koo from LH Learning Group. Welcome to the show, all of you. How are you today?
Fine,
thank you.
Anusha, I'm just going to start with you. You're the conceptualizer and the lead for this entire Seed Jobs for Life program. How did you work out the mechanics and why did Disruptimus International Club of Petaling Jaya decide to embark on this project?
Well, Disruptimus International Club of Petaling Jaya, we are part of a worldwide organization of women's service clubs comprising of women who either run our own businesses or who have been in our own profession. Our philosophy and program goals worldwide are to educate, empower and enable women and girls in every way possible, from early learning right up to continuing education for even elderly women and girls. And obviously, by extension, now we have decided that we need to embrace the whole youth development program, that developing women and girls in isolation with men and boys is no longer productive, and that this whole social climate revolves around building respectful partnerships, collaboration, and that means bringing men and boys on board in the journey for progress. And that's why we are here.
Hope Worldwide Malaysia, you've been around as well. I mean, you're present in 100 countries around the world.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit more about what you do, Katie.
Okay, in Malaysia, Hope Worldwide, yeah, we started in year 2000. Main focus is health. We have a free clinic, pediatric clinic in Penang. And secondly, we have education program and volunteerism program. Yeah, these are the three main focus that we provide for the needs of Malaysians.
And what sets you apart from people like World Vision, for an example?
Mm. Oh, okay. What we do is that we see the needs of the Malaysian, because we wanted to help those poor community family. We help them in terms of the one unit basis as a family. In a family, what they need? They need basic healthcare, the children education, and volunteerism, that they can grow up to be independent as well.
Webster, the LH Learning Group, it's almost like, you know, these two have international, you know, links. You are
correct. The,
you know, sole guy here, social enterprise and all of that. I like that word, social enterprise. What do you actually do?
Well, you said it spot on, social enterprise. To Malaysia, social enterprise is a very new thing. To simply put it, it's actually taking a business as it is, but focusing it not just for the profit, but specifically for the social impact within the community that we work with. And where we come from, with the name Lighthouse Learning Group, the focus is where we become a lighthouse, a beacon to the community that we work with. And specifically, our target has always been youth. We're very passionate about teenagers. And when we talk about teenagers, we were thinking to ourselves, what is the one thing that we can give them or support them that gives them that gift that they can persevere and grow from then on? Because we want to focus on sustainability rather than like spoon feeding. So on our side, we found that education can be a very powerful tool. And education, not just on the context of like them having them score A's, but the ability of them scoring that A.
You have empowered about 15,000 individuals.
Yes, so far.
How do you know you've successfully empowered them?
Very good question, actually. It's something that is an ongoing process. Personally, I've been in the field by accident, actually. And it's a journey that's taken me into a 360 degrees shift. And over the last 9 years of my life, I've been working in the education industry. And when we talk about education and when we focus on empowering them or at the root of getting them to be independent and learning how to learn, it allows them to develop themselves as an individual. And you've seen students from primary going to secondary persevering for themselves rather than just for the peers or the peer pressure that they have. Mm-hmm. And we've been in this for the last 4 years, and it's been a very, very challenging 4 years. And that's one of the biggest questions that we ask ourselves. Is what we're doing really impacting, or is there any results? And very blessed to see from the results, like from our interviews, from our before-after tests, and looking at the students' results and happiness before and after the programs, from a few days to a few months to a few years, they are more positive and they are more productive. And that really spurs us to kind of like, as a small Malaysian startup company, to keep going even more.
I've always been a huge advocate for social enterprises. I mean, Anusha, Sir Optimus International, and Katie, Hope Worldwide. And I think you depend very much on philanthropy, donations, charities, stuff like that. I mean, do you think this is feasible going forward, you know, in the long term? Is this a model that you think you will be able to keep up with?
Yes, definitely. SEED, Jobs for Life, stands for Sir Optimus, Educate, Empower, and Enable Dream Jobs for Life. The Babudi Baganda Challenge Grant was only a small portion of the entire funding for intensive transformation work. I don't call it training. I call it human transformation program over 12 Saturdays. The rest of the money came from corporate donations and fundraising dinners that we had through our club's own efforts. And some of us individual members have also donated something or other, whether it's the T-shirts, the folders, or the training materials. It is sustainable because when we bring the people on board as trainers, we're actually bringing business coaches, we're actually bringing in people who are entrepreneurs, who are ready to mentor the participants. So we are bringing in corporate leaders who actually on any given day wouldn't even conduct training. And even if they did, we would have to pay high amounts of money to secure them. This is where our program is unique. It's not a generic training program. It's not a template that any other training organization in Malaysia is doing. I think the strongest point that Sir Optimus have is our network and our connections. Mm-hmm. Each of us has somebody powerful out there who has a skill or a body of experience that they can bring and share with our participants. Mm-hmm. And what we are doing is transforming people to transforming the way they view themselves, their self-esteem, their image. They are eliminating their fears and doubts about themselves. Allow me to just quickly share with you a couple of stories of my own students. We have a boy, a young man, who's called Firdaus. He prefers to be called Daus. He comes from Pahang. He has come from a Malay education stream. He's never spoken a word of English in a social context, let alone in a group setting. His passion and his talent is in animation, and he sought safety behind the computer, creating the most amazing animation work. Now he's 5 Saturdays with us. Last week was Project Challenge Week, and we ran it almost like Donald Trump's Apprentice or Dragon's Den. And Daus was team leader. And he showed up. He showed that he could lead, he could take charge, and he's so happy that he actually could lead a group and speak and do everything in English. Now we have Carmen Lin, who's come from a Chinese education background, only finished Form 5, who always saw herself as an introvert and somebody who would hide behind her creative writing and poetry compositions. And then when she had the personality profiling test, which an organizational psychologist we brought on board did for everybody, she discovered that she was what we call a high I. You know, you have DISC, you're a dominant, you're inspirational, stable, or you're controlling. And she was a high I, and she came up to me and said, "Dr. Anusha, I can't believe it. I've got such high scores in I. That means I'm supposed to be inspiring, but I'm an introvert and I don't talk to people." I said, "Well, Carmen, I've been observing you from day one. You are influencing in your group, eyes for influence. You're a quiet influence, but you're making things happen." And now she was project leader last week, and her team did exceptionally well. So, Mira, we are unlocking the potential that even they never realized they had.
Wonderful. Katie, your experience so far, and you know, how have you utilized the 25,000 ringgit that, you know, Agency Inovasi Malaysia has given to you?
Yeah. When we started this, we definitely want to look into the sustainability. To start the program is not just say start it and then let's do it, but it's about sustainability. Hope Worldwide have been around for 15 years. That's where we see this program, why we want to start it this year after 15 years, is the reason is that we did see the sustainability of this program and training the youth. One of the strengths that Hope Worldwide that we have is that we have a very strong connection CSR with the corporate. Mm-hmm. Corporate social responsibility is always that we look into the long-term sustainability. It's not about touch-and-go event with certain corporation. So with this, even with the seed money that we have, it's not just for us just to be, okay, that is how we can sustain. But this is just give us the motivations of this to start up this program in the long term with most of the corporate that have been with us for so many, many years.
You have been very successful at getting corporations to part with their money. That's not an easy thing to do. Mm. How do you do that?
Well, it's not easy. The fact is that for the past 10 years, I'm a fundraiser focusing on the corporate CSR. When we do collaboration with the corporate, we don't just say, hey, give us your money. It's about collaborate with us, volunteerism. We are the platform for the corporate to volunteer. When they volunteer, the staff, they can actually experience, they can know the community, the family by themselves. And with that, they can be actually bring that to the corporate. And that's where we see the long-term partnership. When we work with all these corporate, it's not one time. It's a long term we have been built up since for the past 10 years that we built in with the trust, the transparency of the financial and also sustainability to see the life transform of all these families.
Mm. What are your challenges, Webster? I mean, these people have their act together.
No doubt.
So much support, you know.
No doubt. These two ladies, I feel very honoured to be actually in the same room with two amazing people that not just have a very positive cause that they run, but also manage to get the fundings in to get it properly running. Yeah. Because, I mean, I experienced it back in my younger days where I go out and just do random good stuff because you can. It's just feeding yourself and getting it done. But to actually run an organization to create a second and third level of impact, it's not easy. And I used to have a very light-minded thing and say, oh, just do it. Mm-hmm. And no doubt, I still have that. It's just that I now respect the fact of like the efforts that goes behind it. And for us, we don't focus on getting money from large organizations because number one is there's so many out there that's already asking, and there's only so much a company can provide to. So we wanted to go to a different approach. And we were thinking, what will be something that Malaysians can do to help Malaysians? And one of the things is like, that's where the model we brought in. This program is not something new, I would admit, and it is something that's already been evolved, but in the private industry. And it's an amazing program that focuses on improving not just the child's ability to study, but also their personal perception and also the family bonding. And that's amazing, you know. And I've been very blessed to see that change. My question was, why is it only those that have the money, the parents that can afford it, gives this to the kids? What about the rest of the Malaysian people? And I come from a very, very modest family. And thinking back, is like, I will never have this experience. And that's one of the major motivations that drives us in. And the question is, how can we give this quality program to someone that may not be able to afford it? That's where the idea of taking the Robin Hood system in.
Yep. So where did you get the money from?
Taking the social enterprise business idea where we conduct proper business programs, where we run private programs with the public, where parents invest for their children to get personalized learning. And from that revenue, we channel it back into our social programs where we run it in local schools, we do it in orphanages and in community homes.
Who are these parents?
Parents are the general public. We are talking about Malaysians.
So you're depending on donations as well?
Not really. Actually, they are paying for a service. Parents buy into our workshops, our coaching programs, and they are actually buying into the service for their children. Mm-hmm. But rather than just that service, it focuses on also funding the social programs.
Okay, so whatever you make, you're actually channeling it.
Yes, Correct.
Doing better social good. Okay. We're discussing how to train the marginalized youth, part of the Agency Inovasi Malaysia's Berbudi Berganda Social Impact Innovation Challenge. When we come back, we'll find out more about, I want to find out who exactly, who is, what do you mean by marginalized and who falls into this group? Up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasuthi. We are in our third installment of the Agency Inovasi Malaysia's Berbudi Berganda Social Impact Innovation Challenge. We've spoken about the homeless before. We've had Eddie Razak on the show to talk to us about what Agency Inovasi Malaysia is all about. Social innovation is very, very new, not just in this country, but in the world, actually. And I'm very proud, actually, that the Malaysian government actually recognized it and is putting some sort of framework in place. In the studio with me to discuss training the marginalized youth, Dato' Anusha Santirasdeepam from Sir Optimus International Club of Petaling Jaya. They've got something called the Seed Jobs for Life project going on at the moment. Katie Lee, the Executive Director of Hope Worldwide Malaysia, and Webster Koo from LH Learning Group. Anusha, who is marginalized, really? Because we have graduates who are unemployed. We have people who are socioeconomically challenged. So who is actually marginalized?
Well,
and how do you decide who you're going to help?
All right, maybe just take a step back. When our club started projects way back in the early 1990s or even the late 1990s, for us, the marginalized were the people in the urban slums, people who came from rural areas who thought that coming to the big city, they would get their dream jobs and their dream homes and everything. And then they found that they had hurdles every step of the way. So these are people who are just thrown crumbs. So if they get if a woman who is an Indian woman who comes out from, say, Batang Berjuntai to Petaling Jaya and sits in Taman Medan, and all she can get is a cleaner job at the Guinness factory round the corner, should just grab it. You know, there would be people who would be selling cakes by the roadside and hoping to get a business license from MBPJ and not have their trolley carted away. They would be marginalized. There would be somebody who goes to Bank Simpanan to get a microfinance credit when it was launched in the 1990s and gets turned away and said, borang sudah habis, but actually that borang was reserved for some friends and relatives. So this is marginalized. So I would, in a nutshell, say marginalized are people who don't have access, either they don't have connections, they don't have the know-who, or they don't have the know-how, or sometimes it's just they don't have the know-what. They just don't know what they want. In our program today, we have participants who are degree holders and diploma holders who have come from, I would say, middle-class backgrounds. But we also have people who have come from rural areas. We have people who come from homes that are, I wouldn't use the word broken, but homes where which are dysfunctional. And it's coming apparent now that these are people whose even parents or families didn't believe in them. You can be marginalized in your own home because your parents or your siblings don't think you're worth anything. So I think if you bring a psychologist, they would say marginalized are people who are unloved or unwanted. And I'm seeing that in, I'm getting quite emotional here, but I'm actually seeing that in,
totally
in because
understand.
I think they are my children now.
And, you know, speaking of psychology, a lot of them have baggage, psychological baggage.
Correct.
How do you deal with that, Katie?
Well, for Hope Worldwide, we definitely, I can relate when Anusha was, I think she's sharing tear now. We are the grassroots. We are dealing with all this community. When we, I would like to share that some these families, we started 15 years ago in Sentul, free clinic. And you look at, you talk about 15 years, and some of the children, the family brought their children for the consultation. If since young or 1 year old, they seek for consultation, after 15 years, now they are 15 years old. They are the youth. When we look at them since young, these are the family that come from a very tough background. You're talking about single mother. You're talking about those family that's less than 1,000 income. And some of them, they are talking about, okay, what's next meal I'm going to have? They cannot even think or able to have the choice to choose what they want. So these are the family that we are facing every day. The reason when we start up this, when we see the giving them the choice and giving them for the youth to see them when they grow up, you know, they don't have to struggle in this way. They don't have to be same again. They have the opportunity, they have the choice. We are the one giving them the resources, yeah. the network for them to give them this opportunity. They can have the skill. That is where that's all this come from, that we wanted to see them to be able to be independently.
But one of the challenges, you know, dealing with children who are socioeconomically challenged, for an example, is changing their mindset. How do you do that?
Well, it is tough.
And it's a long-term process. It's not something you can do over 5 Saturdays, you know what I mean?
Exactly. That's where our whole white team is, to bring hope changing life. We can't change their mindset. We can't change people's mindset. But we only can give them hope, the inspiration. When they experience, people are personally there to help them, to be with them. They really give them time, personal time. These kids, when they grow up, they know. They can feel it. They know the sincerity of all these people have helped them. That's why the volunteerism is really a successful program that we have, because we did see the changes of all those kids from a low self-esteem. They can't even look at you eye to eye. When we have the volunteerism, these kids, we can see them, the confidence that built in because of the volunteer give them this hope. Their sincerity, it really touched them. They can be turned up to be grateful. They will not be entitled. Oh, okay, I'm poor. I just give me what I want. It's entitlement in all these people. But when they really experience the sincerity, they will actually see that, okay, there are really people love me who I am. Even I'm poor, I am not welcome in the society. So that actually will change them to be different. We really see a lot of these kids that from really entitled to be someone that they are thankful, they are joyful, they are smiling at you, say thank you all the time. That is the one of the weaknesses we did see in all these families.
Webster, you mentioned you've been in this, you know, so-called business for 4 years now. How do you get the empowered to empower?
Oh, that's a very good question. The beautiful thing about what Katie and Datuk mentioned is they put themselves on the line to work with people. And the amazing thing about people is something that money can never buy. It's the change within themselves and seeing them actually live a better life. That is something that drives anyone, especially my team of people. My team of people are people from different backgrounds, different professional skills. But they come together focusing on utilizing tools that we focus on, which is teaching them how to learn. You ask a very good question of, like, how do you change mindset? Mindset is a very difficult thing to change. It's like training an old dog new tricks. It's difficult, but it's not impossible. It's just a matter of, like, strategizing techniques. And in psychology, it's all about reconditioning.
Yeah.
So it's an amazing thing, because whatever happens is about the perception of what's happening. When adults look at problems, they look at problems as, oh, poor thing. But for a young child or teenager, they don't look at themselves as, oh, I'm poor thing, no such thing. For them, it's like, I'm happy. Even though my parents doesn't earn that much, I'm still happy. So the question for them is, it's what's their perception? And on our side is, why we chose education, why we chose school? It's because they spend the most time there. And in school, imagine this, if you're a student and you're performing very well, what would that affect your self-esteem with? It develops it. But if you're not performing, what does that affect on your self-esteem?
How do you speak the right language?
Ah, very good. The language part. On our side, when we run our programs, we run it, when we talk about marginalization, we don't talk about, like, where are you from? When we do our programs, how we select is we select the school that has the teachers, especially the counselors, that has the same passion and drive to want to work with us on helping their students. And it's the whole form. We're talking about the whole form 3 and the whole form 5. And we'll break them up into 3 segments because of space. We want to actually be personal as possible. So we'll break them into the top class, the middle class, and the last class. The same content of sharing, but the different lingo that we speak with them. The smarter class, they don't really care about how emotional you are. You just want strategies and to make you go faster and more effective. The middle class are the students that they work very hard, but they don't always get the results they want. So they want a mix. They want a balance. And we have the last class, which for them, they've noticed themselves not being able to actually be any good students. So they utilize their intelligence in other forms, which sometimes could be a bit tricky. So
you find some of the most intelligent people sitting in prison.
Oh yeah. That's so true. That's why when we do our memory test with them, we get the best results from the last classes. And those are the things that really motivate us, because I came from that classes. And it's like it's because it's a gift that I've been given that it motivates me to keep giving some more.
Right.
And we notice the fact that marginalization, it's all about picking. But on our side, it's like education, it's a right for everyone. And when we empower them with that skill and allow them to see their potential, it gives them the opportunity to stretch out from there.
Is government behind you in this program? It's not easy.
Definitely not easy.
Getting into government school.
Yeah, when we first started off, the great thing is, I'll admit this on radio, oh my gosh. When we first started off, we didn't get any approvals from any government organizations. But
you do now, right?
We do, yes, of course. The amazing thing is, we share what our goals are with the school councils. Why I work with councils so well is because being in the psychology field, and in today's world, back in the old days, right, when you have counsellors, they have no psychological training whatsoever. Yeah. But in today, Malaysian counsellors, they have some sort of counselling training, which is amazing. Back in the day, there's no such thing. The teacher that can hold the rotan is the counsellor. Mm-hmm. But in today, they actually train and they understand the back-end work towards improving a student's development. And it's not about just scoring the A, but it's about how they develop themselves. So when the teachers, the counsellors see where we come from and what we want to aim to do, they actually volunteer. Teachers, Malaysian teachers, volunteer to take extra time out of their own schedule to get the approvals for us to run the programs.
I'm very impressed.
Exactly. How can you not want to work harder for them, you know? So we had a lot of assistance from people on the ground. We're talking about the teachers. We're talking about the counselors. We're talking about some parents that have been our clients. They send their kids to us and they help get connections with us, with organizations, with amazing talents, and got us into where we are today.
Fantastic. Mm.
Mira, you mentioned a very important point just now when you asked us, how do we ensure that there is that we can sustain that momentum, yes, we've built in the youth that we keep, for example, in our case, over 12 Saturdays, over a three-month period. Mm. I would say what we are doing with this whole program is like if you've made an Indonesian layer cake, and you know how you have to have the very
different
rich
layers,
ingredients, and you have to have the patience, persistence, and perseverance to do layer by layer by layer.
Let's stay local, the Sarawak layer.
Yes, all right. The Sarawak
and
layer cake.
That comes in beautiful colors.
All right. So basically, the whole philosophy is built on that. Mm. It's the whole program is around developing them over a period of time where you add layers to their personality, their character, unlocking their potential. So we started with a celebrated author who would then ask them to know themselves. And then we had a dream building, goal setting, personality profiling, communication style realization. And then you go on to things like the leader in you, team building, working in teams so everyone wins, critical thinking, problem solving. Then going on to the resume, because we know as employers and as entrepreneurs, thousands of people send their resumes. How many resumes are actually read? People go into interviews blind, not knowing how to manage an interview process. But more importantly, what we are doing is not just finishing 12 weeks, give a certificate and walk away. Soroptimus International, it's all about enabling people and empowering them for life. So this is a life-changing process. I think Webster's mentioned it. Hope is also looking at it. It's not just get them the job, walk away. No, their lives must be transformed. They must sustain this kind of transformed person throughout whatever challenges they may come across. Because life's not a bag of roses, right? No. It's going to be difficult. So what we are also doing is to make sure they have mentors, business coaches if they want to start their own business, and apprentice to somebody who's actually very successful in the field they want to go into. And we are actually going to monitor them. There's no hand-holding here. So we'll tell them if they're going off course. In fact, we're very strict with attendance. If people don't show up, we actually follow up. I actually open myself to being vulnerable because I actually go and SMS all these people, so they all have my mobile numbers now, so all of them can be going after me months later with can you help me with this, that and the other, but I'm willing to take that risk.
Are corporations open to this?
Yes, they are.
They are. Okay. So because often the marginalized are marginalized when it comes to, you know, job opportunities and things like that. But do you think corporations are open to this because they have your backing as an international club?
Yes, I believe that it's become very apparent even with the guest speakers and trainers we got, because I think if it wasn't for us being Sir Optimus International and asking someone who's the CEO of a business to come and talk to us and even say what kind of jobs they can offer, it would be tough. We are all using our own business connections to bring in the right type of people to talk to them, the right experts. We are also basically lending our reputation, our integrity, and our track record of delivery of programs to make sure that the employers stay on board with us.
And I'm always for, I use this word over and over again, is this model sustainable?
It is, but we would need funding to make it nationwide. And that's why we got into Babudi Buganda, because we actually want to attract foundations and corporate backing to take this on a national platform, and preferably using social media as an e-learning way.
But do you find that, you know, corporations are... There's a lot. It's a long journey. You know, they need to understand that this is what you call social financing. Mm. They need to understand that, you know, you can't see results. Results are not always tangible.
Correct.
And so how do you convince them, Katie? Well,
I think for
you've done it quite well. I understand.
Thank you. I think for sustainability, it doesn't look at one angle, or like we talk about, okay, money is enough. Or it's not. It is like you have to look at the whole angle of if you want to sustain something, or in this case, it's the youth program that we're helping the marginalized group. Mm. You need group of, like, it take a whole village to succeed certain thing. Mm. You need the funding. You need the resources. You need the support from the corporate. You need the commitment of the full-time people. You know, that is all it takes to sustain the program. If you have a big pool of money, but you don't have the resources, you don't have a committed volunteer, they don't turn up here and the next second they are not here, that is actually, it will not sustain it. It's how beautiful, how structured, how impactful your program it is, but it would not help you to sustain long term.
Yeah. Mm. Any plans to move towards a social enterprise model?
For Hope Worldwide, we are a charity organization. Okay. So, it's not for us to move to the social enterprise, because at this point of time, we rely on lots on corporate funding and on our own fundraisings as well. So in this area, I look at it is that our support mainly is relies on these fields of the sources that we have.
Okay. And Sir Optimus, any plans to move your model towards a social enterprise?
Well, you know what? There's something interesting that has unfolded with our program. Easily half of our participants are actually wanting to start their own business.
And you have about 40 of them now.
Yes. Okay. And some of them are actually looking at a social enterprise in their own right. So there is the very, very high likelihood that we will actually be grooming future social entrepreneurs from within our team. Mm-hmm. And they could be mentors and coaches and trainers for more people out there. That is one of our high aspirations.
Okay. I suppose what's coming through is actually the fact that we've started the process going,
yes,
isn't
yes.
it? I think if we didn't, then we'd never
yes.
know. It's a long journey, but
it
yeah. we've started it.
It is.
So when you know you're not getting anywhere with these participants, what do you do then?
Oh, you just have to be super flexible. Super flexible to the point that you have... Because speaking to teenagers, to the youth, they are, if I may, they are no-nonsense people. I call it they don't care about BS. So if you're not genuine... They can see. Unlike adults, they'll have interpretations and stuff. But teenagers, they don't care. For them, it's like, if you're real, you're real. And sometimes if you don't connect to them, it could be that we're doing something that is not effective as of now. So it's about being flexible. One of the things that we share with our teachers, when we do our teachers training, is like, teachers ask this question, why is it that I spend 6 years with this student and they don't care about us? But you had 2 hours with them and they are like, in love, in wanting to improve themselves. What's the difference? And I gave you this analogy of like one of the world's famous superheroes in comic world, Batman. He's the one superhero that doesn't have any superpowers. What does he have? He has his utility belt, his ability to be flexible of using whatever he has to save the situation. And that's what teachers are. Teachers are not any, as just like everyone else, is human beings, but it's about how flexible they are. And when that Katie case, she's an NGO as a nature, and the amazing thing is she doesn't need to move into a social enterprise, but she works very well with social enterprises. Organizations that can come in focusing on helping her need, and generating revenue on their own. So in a way, a big burden can be released on her side. And that was amazing because she's not just working on people today, on just this level, but actually grooming for the next level. And that's what we look at on our side too, because most of the time it's like, if you can't connect, it doesn't mean someone else can't. And we encourage all our students that have gone through our program to start teaching the same thing that they've learned to other people, because learning it on yourself is learning skills, but if by sharing it to another person, it's mastery. It's a totally different game.
See, it takes a young fella to think about connecting on a Batman level. I would never have thought about it.
I can relate to that. I love superheroes.
Amazing. So, I mean, Foster Optimus International, I mean, the winner only gets 30,000 ringgit. Mm. What will you do with that money? And as I said, it's so little. Compared to the problems out there, 30,000.
All right, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to tell you, if Sir Optimus International Club of Petaling Jaya wins this money, we may want to share it with one of the others.
Oh,
you know why?
Fantastic.
Because when I sat through all the incubation program run by a very wonderful group called Shujok, who actually was brought in by Agency Innovasi Malaysia, we saw the huge potential of some of the other winners. And because we are already a very large network with, you know, with members throughout the country, there is no reason why Sir Optimus International couldn't work in partnership. So we may very well work with somebody in this room or somebody in the other room, but that's what we'll do if we win.
Fantastic. I mean, I think, and the other thing is, I think it's brought you all together.
Yes, true.
Like-minded people, and only good things can come out of it. I mean, money aside, only good things can come out of it. Katie, you know, your plans going forward?
Well, for Hope Worldwide, when we started this youth program, actually it gave us another stage of, we see the needs of helping the youth to be independent, because it's really helped us. Because for the past 15 years, we are in the stage of giving, on I be it in either consultations or providing them education. But when we see the youth, we started this last month, and I personally can witness some of the youth. When we train them on skill, I literally can see them, their confidence, the way they speak. And some of the youth, and two of these boys, and they came to our clinic last week. We trained them. They visit our clinic since one of them are 5 years old, one of them 9 years old.
Wow.
Today they were talking about, wow, now I'm 18, the other one is 19. I can literally see myself that helping out in the clinical work, calling up the patient and being trained by our nurse and being with the doctors. And it's give like it's like a light to this youth. So it helps us to see that, you know, we can help the youth, a group of the youth, to be able to have their own a life on their own, that they won't be struggled through. They don't know what to do, or they are heading nowhere, directionless. But when they share, I can hear their feeling of so much of the confidence, the hope in them. That the kids, they won't read by script. They just say whatever from their heart. And that is so heartwarming. That is give us the motivation to really see this is a program that is really help them. It's not just giving them fish, but we teach them how to fish.
Yeah.
So you will just continue doing what you're actually doing at the moment. The 30,000 will just spur, help you help
definitely
a few more families. Webster, going forward, what will you do if you win the 30,000 ringgit?
I think before the money actually comes in, we already won a very great deal out of the program, the competition.
The 12 finalists.
Being the 12 finalists, the amazing thing is you get the mentorship with them. When we started this off, it all started with the positive intention of doing what we want to do. And sometimes when you go in that journey, you then only realize what other things you do not know, because we don't know what we don't know. And going through the mentorship program allowed us to learn so many things that helps us solidify and actually create a more sustainable program and module. And those are the things that I'm very blessed with. About what this 30,000 can do, well, like I mentioned, our business model has been to self-sustain by running privately paid programs to satisfy a client and then fulfill the need. But the 30,000 actually helps us not just help our organization, but actually the community in the sense of development. What I mean by that, many years ago, when people were to say to the student, it's like, hey, would you like to improve your studying? The child said, yes. Tell your parents about this program where your teacher teaches you after school. And the child goes back to the parents and says, "Mummy, my teacher wants to teach me some more after school, and we just need to pay a little amount. It's called tuition." Parents will say, "That's crazy." Because back in the day, you go to school and learn. There's no tuition. But many years later, because the trend started, tuition became normal. And that's it's like a community thing. But now, in today's world, we realize that tuition alone is not important. It's not enough. And we need to develop a new culture, because there's only so much a government can do. There's only so much organization like yours can do. We need the community's focus on this. So we need to kind of like impact the community by getting them to be the one asking for it. So this 30,000 is going to be meant to work on the grounds, in a way running our programs to market it by the results. That's why when we work with the kids, with the schools, with the students, it's for them to let the parents know, to let the community know, to develop the need where developing oneself is the norm.
Okay. Anusha, I'm going to ask you to wrap up. Your message on training the marginalized youth.
My message on training them? I would say that anyone who wants to change will come forward and make it happen.
It can be done.
The thing is, for them, as Webster just said, sometimes people just don't know what they don't know. And when they come to our programs, they realize what they are capable of. I think one of the biggest weaknesses with the education system, the way we have it in this country, is that we are churning out people with degrees, certificates, and all that, all those A's out there, numbers of which we never dreamt of when we were in school. But, you know, what we are not training people is to be able to open up and speak. One of the things that has come across in our training on Seeds Jobs for Life is the weakness in communication.
Oh, yes.
People are not able to communicate verbally, face-to-face in groups because everything is done digitally now. And I think if there's one takeaway from this entire program is they now know how to stand up on their feet and speak. They know how to speak in groups, and they are confident being speaking in English. That's a big plus.
Thank you all very much for joining me today. For more information on Agency Inovasi Malaysia's Berbudi Berganda Social Impact Innovation Challenge, log on to innovation.my or follow them on Twitter at Berbudi Berganda. Dato' Anusha Santirastibam from Seroptimus International Club of Petaling Jaya, Katie Lee, Executive Director of Hope Worldwide Malaysia, and Webster Koo from LH Learning Group on training the marginalised youth on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.